Back together again, you and I wrapping up a very busy week on Friday, August the 2nd, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcomed artificial intelligence expert Professor Pedro Domingos, author of 2040, a Silicon Valley satire, and chatted with him about whether or not Americans would ever elect an AI president. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his regular update while I offered some early thoughts in the show on the process that formally nominated VP Kamala Harris to be the Democrats' November standard bearer for the White House race.
And, you know, sometimes the politics just get so crazy, you get so beat up about it on both sides. Like me, you just enjoy chaos. You sit back and you say, hey, wouldn't this be a funny idea? Well, our next guest has written a new book, and I'll admit I haven't gotten into it yet, but I'm reading some of the PDF stuff sent to me and some of the background on this. And this is my kind of stuff. I like this. Sheer hilarity. Our next guest, by the way, is a world-renowned AI researcher, artificial intelligence, computer science professor, and tech industry insider. His book, The Master Algorithm, Introducing Machine Learning to a Broad Audience, has been translated into a dozen languages. Again, that's pretty good because I can barely speak one language. Professor Pedro Domingos joins us. Name of the book, 2040, a Silicon Valley satire. Hey, Pedro, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Pedro, explain the premise of this book, satire, but I like it. What is the premise of the 2040 presidential race here? I love this. What is this?
It's a race where the Republican candidate is an AI. It's a chatbot. ChatGPT runs for president and then expectedly wins the Republican primary. So now it's in the general election against a Democratic candidate who is the social media influencer posing as a Lakota chief who wants to abolish the United States. And it's all downhill from there.
Folks, let's go over that again. The Republican is a chatbot. And if you don't know what chatbots are, for my listeners, it's kind of like when you get into a customer service site, or maybe you're on an internet, forum there. And sometimes these bots will actually argue with you. They're not real, or they'll help you out. And you say the Democrat is a fake Native American chief looking to abolish the U.S., and then you say, what could go wrong? Pedro, how did you get the idea? How did you get the idea to do this? I think this is hysterical, and I haven't read it yet. But where did the inspiration come from for this?
It was a journalist some years ago. She asked me, so would you vote for an AI for president? And I was a little taken aback by that. And then I said, well, it depends on the other candidate, right? If the human candidate is bad enough, I would vote for an AI for president, even though AI is definitely not ready for that. And the thing that's kind of hilarious and sad is that the candidates that we have, the human ones, are so bad that an AI candidate is starting to look better and better. So the story just grew out of that. It really just tumbled out of me. There's like so much to satirize that it just grew on its own.
Yeah, but you're an AI expert here, an AI professor, and this is fascinating. Now, in writing this, Professor Domingos, and coming up with this, how many times did you ask yourself, could an AI, could a sentient AI program or being, could they actually run the country? What do you think?
Oh, I mean, exactly. An AI could run the country better than a human in many ways, right? Being president of a country or even CEO of a company is just way beyond what any human being can do. And an AI can absorb infinite amounts of information, make very considered decisions very quickly. So very good. At the same time, and this is what a lot of people don't realize, but the book also tries to illustrate, AIs can make stupid mistakes that a child wouldn't. So right, an AI is like an idiot savant. It's brilliant in some ways. Mm. It's absolutely terrible in others.
That's interesting. And I have heard that for all the new horizons, Pedro, that we're looking at with AIs, there is still, or AI programs or machines here, there is still that human kind of element that we really still need for a lot of things, right?
Well, yes. And for example, contrary to our intuition, the easier jobs for AI to automate are the white-collar ones, not the blue-collar ones. Mm. A doctor or a lawyer is easy to replace by AI. A construction worker is hard. So I often jokingly tell people that AI is the revenge of the working class, because maybe it is.
What would you think would happen, Pedro? We're talking to Pedro Domingos, AI expert, professor and author of 2040, a Silicon Valley satire. What would happen if we had an AI president, an AI vice president, and 535 different AI programs in Congress and the Senate? Would they be able to talk to each other? Would they have differing opinions? Would they have to take votes on things? How would that happen?
They totally could and should have different opinions. In fact, one of the jokes in the book is that somebody asks Prezi about the AI candidate, so are you going to, what are you going to do with your cabinet? It's like, well, it's going to be a bunch of AIs. You know, the Secretary of State is an AI,
yeah,
and the Supreme Court justices can all be AIs. But they can and should be AIs with different views, different opinions. And this being a democracy, there should be, for example, in Congress, AIs representing different people, different districts, right? My job as the AI is to, first of all, know my constituents much better than any politician does now, and then honestly represent them much better than any politician does now, and then interact with the others, possibly by voting, but potentially in much more sophisticated ways, right? Like the Constitution, from an AI point of view, is like a very crude algorithm for making decisions, and with AI, you could potentially make much more sophisticated ones. Now, of course, how that all pans out and who controls it, there's a lot of, you know, pitfalls and a lot of things that go wrong, which, again, is part of what 2040 illustrates.
So I would imagine, and yes, the book is 2040, a Silicon Valley satire. So I would imagine, Pedro, that if you had a real congressperson out there talking to constituents about an issue, they might be swayed by what some teary-eyed constituent said or some experience versus what the AI member of Congress, who is what, like Mr. Spock on Star Trek, not emotional, right, but would just run all the demographic information and the gender information and the gross domestic product information of their district and make a decision that way. Is that the way it might differ?
So that's definitely one possibility. But another one, which is less obvious and maybe more worrisome, is that in order to get elected, the AI candidate could actually learn to be much more emotional, much more shrill, much more manipulative than human beings are.
Wow.
So in my previous book, I had a section about AI in politics that was called A Billion Bill Clintons. Right? Bill Clinton had this talent for like...
Wait, hold it. It was called A Billion Bill Clintons. I love that. Go ahead.
You see, the roots of 2040 go back a while, right? So Bill Clinton is the ultimate retail politician, right? Someone who can talk to you
and
make you think that, wow, he's your president, right? And now, but Bill Clinton, there's only one of him, right? He can't talk to every voter at the same time. Prezibot in 2040, he really literally does talk to every voter at the same time, right? So, and then tries to give every voter the impression that he's doing what they want. And of course, that's where things get complicated.
Are there any film rights to this book or a Broadway play? Because to me, if you cast the right people in this book, this would be hysterical. Has anybody approached you? I know it's not out yet, but has anybody approached you yet? Because I can think of people I would plug into this right away.
I haven't sold the film rights yet, but honestly, the 2040 is a very cinematic novel.
Yeah.
I'm picturing it as a movie, the whole... And in fact, the plot is full of references to movies, from A Few Good Men to... I don't want to, you know, give you any spoilers,
okay,
but like, think of a Scorsese movie, right? Like, very over the top,
yeah,
but yet oddly realistic. This is kind of a novel version of a Scorsese movie.
Oh, that's great. Now, to get to the cold, hard realities here, Pedro, we're talking to Professor Pedro Domingos, name of the book 2040, a Silicon Valley satire. AI, Professor, I mean, it seems to change every day. Some of the things I've heard that are possible for medical breakthroughs now and everything, where do we stand? What's this going to look like 5 or 10 years from now? And is there any fear we should have here or not?
AI is making very rapid progress, and indeed we can do amazing things with AI. We can do medical diagnosis better than human doctors. If we cure cancer, it will be with AI, because without it, it's too complicated. So AI is really a very big hope for solving a lot of problems. However, two caveats. One is the things that, as I mentioned earlier, the things that seem to be easy often turn out to be hard and vice versa. So the progress that we see in the next 5 years could be very different from what we're expecting. So there's that caveat. The other caveat is that there are things to worry about. However, they tend to be different from the ones that people are obsessed with. People are obsessed with Terminator, AI takes all our jobs and then exterminates us and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the real difference is the real danger is very different. And again, like what I'm trying to illustrate with Prezibot is the real dangers of AI. The real dangers of AI is the wrong people controlling it. Don't fear the AI turning evil spontaneously, because that ain't going to happen except in Hollywood movies. What you should fear is the people who are using AI to make you do what they want. Mm. Right? Right now, the AIs that you use are controlled by the companies that produce them. And they have their own agenda, not completely different from serving you, but still. You want the AI to be under your control, so you need to see through them to what the real problem is. You know, it's criminals using them, it's totalitarians using them, it's even just politicians who just want to bamboozle you using them.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, finally, Pedro, I've seen some of these deep fakes. I mean, there was an AI deep fake of a debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden about 6 or 8 months ago. And, you know, you could tell a little bit that the voices weren't quite right, but boy, it was darn close. And I watched it and I said, wow, if it's this close now, what could this be like in 2 or 3 years? You know what I mean?
No, exactly. So first of all, those glitches will disappear, but maybe more important than maybe more disturbing. Mm-hmm. I actually think that right now, a debate between a good, you know, Trump deepfake and a good Biden deepfake would be better than the real one. That's the alarming thing. It's like, it doesn't take much, right? I mean, like, Trump is his own thing that he always repeats.
Yeah.
So is Biden a different way. As we'll see, like, I as a viewer might be, as a voter, might be more interested in seeing the deepfake debate than the real one, because it would be more useful to me.
The name of the book is 2040, A Silicon Valley Satire. Pedro Domingos, best-selling author of The Master Algorithm, has been the guest. Pedro, thank you. Good luck in the future, and hopefully we can talk down the road. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
All right, Pedro, thank you. Chris Caruso joins us right now, as he does every 5:15 or so around this time every week, for his look at what has happened over the past 5 days in the greater Bridgeport area, where nothing ever disappoints. Mr. Caruso, how are you, sir?
Thank God it's Friday, Paizan.
Yeah, hey, hold on. Let me try something that we heard from a councilman. Don't you know who I am? No, I don't do that.
Yeah. Chris.
That never works, Chris. Don't you know who I am? Never works.
You didn't do that at the Waterbury DMV today, did you?
No, I... Okay. No, right. But Chris, before I hear what's on your mind, I got to tell you something. Kudos, you know, we get on state agencies a lot. Kudos to the DMV in Waterbury. Chris, I was in and out in 15 minutes.
They really improved the service. And, you know, I've had the same situation. It's been great. You know, you set the appointment, you go in, and they accommodate you. And, you know, people have to thank them. Say, hey, thank you for doing it, because they really... they've gotten it down pretty well, so I'm really happy about it. No, you're right, Paul.
I was joking with a woman next to me, and we saw our numbers coming up quick, and I turned to a woman, very nice woman, and we both laughed. We said, remember when you used to have to take, like, 2 days off to go to the DMV? Remember? You would have to use, vacation time.
Yeah, and there would be, like, 40 chairs, and you had to sit in there, and then the bell would go off for the number, and oh, my own.
Oh, my God. What else is on your mind, Chris, this week? What else?
Well, you know, I just heard, listening, you know, waiting to speak with you, that 60% of the public, I guess, in polling has said that they would favor no-excuse absentee ballots. And, it's interesting, but unless there's a safeguards put in place, you know, you're going to have rampant abuse, and that's something that has to be looked at. You'd have to change the state constitution, but I'm sure with a 60% polling, it would probably encourage the legislature to look at it. But again, I think there's got to be safeguards put in place so that it isn't abused. So it's yet to be seen, even with the excuses, you know, as far as, you know, illness or out of town or military, there's still the abuse, as we've seen in Bridgeport and other towns. So I think we just got to be very careful with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, and Chris, just one more note on this. The thing that I found a little condescending, and I don't know how you read it, but, you know, Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State, with all due respect to her position, I think she was in Hartford this week speaking to Hispanic and Black voters and bemoaning the low turnout and trying to, Chris, in some ways connect that to how difficult it is to vote. And, you know, when I just said, really, maybe there's other reasons that there's a low turnout, but to try and say, well, you know, no excuse absentees is going to fix this, I think that's disingenuous, Chris, and even mildly a little racist to say, oh, we're going to just make it easier for you people. That really rubs me the wrong way.
No, I don't blame you, Paul, but, you know, keep in mind she's the chief elections official, I guess they call it. And her job is to promote, you know, participation. But I agree with you. You know, the no excuse balloting is not going to bring people out. The early voting isn't going to bring people out. You know, people have to have confidence in the system. They have to have confidence in their elected officials. And that all goes right back to the elected officials. Are they doing their job? Are they working hard? Are they reaching constituents? That's what brings turnout. You know, when I was in elected office, we had very big turnout because people knew me. I worked hard. Mm-hmm. I would knock on their doors for elections. I'd be there when they had an issue or a problem to help them resolve it. And people responded. And, you know, even in some of my most difficult primaries when, you know, the political machine was looking to knock me out, we got 75% of the vote in a primary.
Wow.
And the turnout was tremendous. But that all relates to the work of the elected officials in building confidence and support. And we see it in Bridgeport. You know, the turnout is terrible. You know, back in 1985, I managed a campaign for Tom Busey.
Mm-hmm.
He won that election as a mayor in a four-way primary. There was over, I believe, 26,000 Democrats coming out to vote that year, which was tremendous. Now you see in some of these elections, 8,000 and maybe 9,000, mm-hmm. maybe 10 if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
It is terrible. And part of it is just I don't think people believe in the system. I don't think they believe that their vote is going to make a difference. And then when you have the absentee ballot abuse, people that regularly go to the polls say, well, why should I bother? You know, my vote is being undone by the absentee ballot abuse. So I think that's where the system needs to work. And, you know, frankly, in this last legislative session, the legislature did nothing about the absentee ballot abuse. So it just piles on the lack of confidence that people have in the system.
Yeah. Chris, anything else on your mind as we head into this weekend here?
No, I just think it's pretty exciting what's happening national with Harris.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, you remember, Paul, be careful what you wish for, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, Chris, you and I talked about that. And, you know, the Trump team has clearly been knocked on its heels a little bit. But, you know, as I read today, and it was in The Hill this morning, you know, there were some unnamed Democratic strategists who say, okay, she's riding this wave, which will last maybe another week or so with a VP choice. But you know what, Chris?
Sure.
She's going to start to get carpet bombed by the Republican ad machine here. And Chris, I'm telling you, she's got to do news conferences. She has to.
Oh, agree.
And as you and I both see, that's not really her strength. So I would think people are working with her, I would hope.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the other thing, Paul, it's early yet. Even with 100 days out, believe it or not, you know, things will tighten up. I think it's going to be a close race. I would just encourage Trump and his supporters to stop attacking her based on race. You know, he called her a bum, you know, this single person without children.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got to stay away from that stuff. They really do, because it just personalizes the campaign and it makes them look petty. And I think they've just got to stick to the issues, the facts, you know, the policies. You know, there's nothing wrong with debating issues. But when you get personal, I just think it's going to backfire. And I'd encourage, you know, both sides, let's just have a clean campaign. Let's get to the finish line and who wins, wins. But, you know, I just took caution, you know, especially these attacks they're putting on her is not good. It really isn't.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, thank you. Chris Caruso, always good to hear from you. Have a good weekend, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Paul.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah. Bye-bye. So one of the two major parties here in the U.S., in the grand old U.S. of A, the one that always talks about preserving democracy and saying, ooh, democracy is on the ballot this November, and there's a threat to democracy from you-know-who, Orange Man, the Cheeto guy. You know what I'm talking about? Well, you know, while you and I were doing what we do here in our daily lives, maybe you're working today, maybe you are, I don't know, taking a day off, maybe you're shopping, summer classes, whatever. In order to just fly in the face here of what is a tradition in U.S. politics that, oh my God, even those dastardly Republicans did this year, a regular convention with a floor vote that is open, perish the thought, Democrats, to, I don't know, somebody who doesn't agree with you, somebody who is interested in putting maybe another name in nomination for the highest office in the land. Maybe somebody who wants to just voice some sort of opposition. Yeah, the Republicans did that, but the Democrats didn't. Yes, while you and I were puttering around within the last hour, Kamala Harris now pretty much officially locked up the Democratic presidential nominee with a virtual online vote of delegates. Are you kidding me? This is how worried the Democrats are about quashing any sort of other opinion amidst their delegates. Look, you can say all you want about how much you loathe Donald Trump, you hate him, you can't stand him, he's the human embodiment today of Hitler and Mussolini and Stalin and Marx and Genghis Khan and Pol Pot and everybody. Fine, have a field day with that. At least the Republicans had a real process. Well, Paul, you know, the Democrats had to do it because the Ohio ballot deadline. No, that's crap. That's crap because the Ohio deadline didn't mean anything when they were going to do the same thing with Joe Biden. Remember, not just Kamala Harris is the, you know, the apparent nominee here, one step closer, as they say, but even when Joe Biden was still in the race, they were saying they were going to do a virtual nomination. You Democrats out there, explain that. Please, I'd love to hear you on this. Why is the Democratic Party so afraid of a difference of opinion? You got to say, listen, even if you hate every Republican on earth, you know, there were all comers that challenged Donald Trump over the past few months, and it became, you know, apparent that he was going to win the nomination, but Nikki Haley stayed in till the end. Vivek Ramaswamy was in there. You know, other Republican candidates, too. Asa Hutchinson and all that, for whatever reason. You know, other people stayed in. So it was a real process, at least on the Republican side, until everybody said, well, listen, this is going to be a non-starter here for anybody else. You know, Nikki Haley, you know, she fell short, but even she stayed in till the end and spoke at the Republican convention, whether you liked it or not, and called for unity in the end. So explain to me, and don't give me the, please do not give me the Ohio deadline thing, because the deadline is actually September 1. So what is it here? I don't understand it. From the party and the voters and the people who say, well, we care about democracy. Well, apparently you don't. Apparently you don't. Kamala Harris secures the 2024 Democratic nomination. Did it happen at the convention the way Democrats have done this in the past? Bill Clinton, Joe Biden, right? FDR, JFK, Harry Truman. Did any of that happen? No, not today, because I guess dissension is a bad thing, right? VP Kamala Harris has won a majority of delegates during a virtual Democratic National Committee roll call vote. Ha ha! The roll call vote cements her status as the first. Oh, now we've evolved. Now she's the first Black and South Asian American woman to become the presidential nominee of a major party. The roll call vote will continue until at least 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday. It culminates a whirlwind summer rush to replace Joe Biden on the top of the party's ticket after his exit from the race only months before Election Day. Look, and I understand things were happening in a compressed time frame here. I get it. And even if Ms. Harris, Madam VP, had the number of delegates committed to her to win, why not do this at the convention? You tell me. Harris's nomination is weeks before the party's convention in Chicago later on this month as she wages one of the shortest campaigns in recent U.S. history. You know, do they want it? Now, here's what I'm wondering. Because she let loose, and our buddy, our pal, Eric Erickson, every Monday through Friday, noon to 2 here, if you heard the top of Eric's show, she let loose with a couple of word salads over the last couple of days, and you went, huh? What? Are they that afraid of putting her in front of a microphone and in front of cameras? No, honestly, because now you're starting to see a lot of people. In fact, there was an article this morning in The Hill from quoted but yet anonymous Democratic strategists who basically said, we have to keep her away from cameras and microphones where there is not a teleprompter. We got to keep her away from any of those settings for as long as we can. Now, you Democrats out there, you folks who despise Trump, you folks, so we have a good time, but you don't agree with me. How do you feel about this? Or don't you care? My guess is most of you don't care. Well, you should, even if you are 101% backing Kamala Harris, because that's not good. And yes, there's still going to be a convention, but now everything is going to be kumbaya, nice and nice. Republicans never did that. They never guaranteed there couldn't be any opposition at the convention here. So, you know, is there worry here that the only thing marketable about Kamala Harris is her gender and her ethnicity? I don't know. Is she any good? A news conference would be nice, an open news conference by the ever intrepid Washington Press Corps, and maybe she'll knock it out of the park. Maybe she'll hit a grand slam after grand slam after grand slam here. But boy, are they keeping the wraps on her. And listen, it's smart because they may kind of try and replicate what happened in 2020, where they called it the basement campaign, and they set up a TV studio with all the required equipment in Joe Biden's basement, and he won. Now, maybe there are enough people out there who are going to say, well, yeah, do that again, because I hate Trump so much. And that's fine. I get that. I understand that. But, boy, it's so bad that the nomination has to basically happen in the blind here. I mean, at least when a roll call vote of delegates is done during a convention, you can sit back and watch it and say, all right, there's my state. Oh, I know that guy. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She used to be my state Senate member or state House member. Never really liked her, but good for her. She's on national TV. That's great. There's something uniquely American about that. But now we seem to be in the middle of another stealth campaign. And again, I know what you're going to say. Well, Paul, you know, President Biden, he dropped out so late in the game. Well, yeah. And whose fault is that? It's his. And he only did it because he was threatened to be kneecapped, rhetorically, politically, not physically, by the rest of the party. I mean, I guess by what everybody says right now, they were just going to, you know, dangle the 25th Amendment in front of them. By the way, has anybody in the D.C. press corps asked Madam Harris, the vice president, or Mr. Biden, the president, was there any talk of using the 25th Amendment here? Why hasn't that been asked? Even if the answer might be phony, why hasn't even that been asked? My God, the D.C. press corps has turned uber spineless again. And it should frighten you. It should. Doesn't matter whether it's Republicans on one side or Democrats on the other or vice versa. The kid gloves, if I can use a boxing metaphor here during the Olympics, the soft touch here, the kid gloves to which this campaign has been covered, unless it's Donald Trump, by the way, questioning someone. I have audio for later. You know who first questioned whether Kamala Harris is actually black or Jamaican or Asian? One Donald Trump was an African-American gentleman on a high-profile cable news outlet. And he did that back in 2019. Nobody talks about that one, but a couple of online outlets have posted that rather testy exchange between this African-American gentleman who thought that back then Kamala Harris was, again, trying to be anything she could to get ahead, and one journalist pushing back on him. It turned out to be a pretty good little on-air brawl on CNN 4 years ago. I'll have the audio for you. And I remembered it because all during this, Trump foray into whether, well, she's not really honest about who she is. Is she Indian? Is she Jamaican? You know, whatever. I said to myself, somebody else brought this up in 2019, and I couldn't remember who it was until I saw who it was. You may be interested when you find out who that is. I'll get to that later on. But, man, this bothers me. This should really bother you. And, again, it's not because anybody was going to come swooping down from the rafters or swooping in from somewhere else to take the nomination away from Kamala Harris. That's not the issue. Why was this done in maybe not in secret, but virtually? Why? You tell me. What is wrong? And I know what the answer is going to be because I've already seen it. Well, the Ohio ballot deadline, that's crap, and you know it is. God almighty, don't succumb to that idiotic thinking. Does that bother you a little bit? Imagine if the Republicans did that. Oh, Donald Trump secures his renomination to the grand old party, but he doesn't do it out in the open. Why are the Republicans so afraid of any pushback, but the Democrats do it? Shh, don't say anything. Shh.